Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, here we are, still trying to get through the scenes of Richard III, and I think what might be best to do is we'll finish this program, and I think it might be good if we just postpone our discussion on 13 hours for one more week. So all of you that are waiting for the discussion on 13 hours, just be patient and we'll get through Richard III. But the last time I was talking about how villainous Richard was to his own cousin Buckingham and then to his two nephews, but it really was actually got much worse than that. And so what I want to do is I want to come back to Act 4, Scene 2, and we're going to skip down to the discussion where it states, rumor it abroad. And I didn't write down the line number here, but it's just really in that first, it's probably going to be around line 50 or 60 here. But this is after Buckingham requests that he has the opportunity to think about whether he's going to kill the two nephews or not. Richard then says, rumored abroad that Anne, my wife, is sick and like to die. I will take order for her keeping close. Inquire me out some mean-born gentleman whom I will marry straight to Clarence's daughter. And so, George did have a beautiful daughter and he had a beautiful son. And so Richard is trying to get her married off to some mean-born gentleman. In other words, he doesn't want her marrying into royalty because he doesn't want any threat to his throne. And so then he also talks about George's son. He says, the boy is foolish, and I fear him not. And he said, look, the kid is worthless. And so, just really cruelty upon cruelty. He says, look how thou dreamest, I say again, give out that Anne, my wife, is sick and like to die. About it, for it stands me much upon to stop all hopes whose growth may damage me. Now he goes on to say, he says, I must be married to my brother's daughter, or else, and when he's talking about Edward IV here, and he said, I must be married to my brother's daughter, or else my kingdom stands on brittle glass. Murder her brothers, and then marry her. Uncertain way of gain, but I am in so far in blood that sin will pluck on sin. Tear-falling pity dwells not in this eye. So he's saying, look, there's just no emotion in me. And he said, I've done so much evil, and I've committed so many sins that, I'm just going for broke. I'm going to kill them all so that I don't have any, there's no threat to my throne. Now, it is interesting. I skipped ahead in the scene, but as soon as Buckingham would not immediately commit to killing the two nephews, he had his boy page go find another executioner. And this executioner's name is Tyrrell. So when he finishes this last line, tear-falling pity dwells not in this eye, the page comes back in with Tyrrell. And he says, is your name Tyrrell? James Tyrrell, and your most obedient subject. And he says, are you indeed? He says, prove me, my gracious sovereign. So here he is. Remember, he's in the company of murderers. These are his pals. These are his friends. And he says, darest you resolve to kill a friend of mine? He says, I, my lord, but I had rather kill two enemies. And so you can see that Shakespeare is setting us up here. He says, why, there thou hast it. Two deep enemies, foes to my rest and my sweet sleep's disturbers, are they that I would have thee deal upon. Tyrrell, I mean those bastards in the tower. Now, if you really think about it, Edward V is only 12, and his brother, I should say Edward V's younger brother, is like about 8 or 9 or 10, or maybe even 8. And he says that these are his deep enemies, and they disturb his sleep. I mean, he's just been crowned king, and he can't wait to get rid of them. You can also know the history, too, that Richard tries to say that these two young boys couldn't go onto the throne because their mother was, Elizabeth Woodville, and she was a commoner. And if you remember, Edward IV married her secretly, and so they were considering it not even a valid marriage. And so these young boys didn't have any rights to the throne, but that was disproven anyway. But he still calls them bastards. And Tyrell says, "Let me have open means to come to them, and soon I'll rid you from the fear of them." And then Richard, look what Richard says here. He says, "You sing sweet music. Hark, comes hither. Tyrell, go this token. Rise and lend your ear." So he hands him a ring, and he says, "Look, here's a token, and I'm going to pay you well." You know, it was one of his rings, and so he had to bring it back. But then he whispers in his ear, he says, "There is no more but so. Say it is done, and I will love you and prefer you too." And so you know, how evil is that? And how, villainous is that? Now, in it's not a change of scene, but as he's talking to Tyrell, he says there, "Shall we hear from you, Tyrell, ere we sleep?" And he says, "You shall, my lord." And so he said, "Look, I want this done before I even go to bed tonight." So Buckingham comes back in, and Buckingham says, "Look, I have considered in my mind the late demand that you did sound in me." And then Richard III says, "Well, let that pass. Dorset has fled to Richmond." And so, he's talking about, one of the other, I think it's one of the sons of Lady Grey. And so, he's already gone. And Buckingham says, "I hear that news, my lord." He says, "Stanley, he is your wife's son. Well, look to it." And so Stanley, remember, is the stepson of, Henry Tudor. And so, he is the stepfather to Henry Tudor. Henry Tudor is his stepson. But Buckingham's comes back there and says, "My lord, I claim your gift, my due by promise, for which your honor and your faith is pawned, the earldom of Hereford, and the movables the which you promised I should possess." And so essentially what's going on here, listeners, is, Buckingham comes back and says, "Look, I considered it," but we really don't know what he considered, because Richard says, "That's not a problem right now, but there's some other problems." In other words, the tide against Richard is starting to build. The first day he's king, crowned king, and people are starting to flee to Richmond, or the Earl of Richmond, or to Henry Tudor, or who becomes Henry VII. And Richard is even questioning Stanley here. But notice what what Buckingham says to Richard. He says, "Now, I help make you king. You made me promises. Now I want you to come forward. You promised to make me the Earl of Hereford," and that was Lancastrian. And he said, "Look, you promised that to me." And then Richard kind of ignores him, and he says, "Stanley, look to your wife. If she convey letters to Richmond, you shall answer it." So he's really more concerned about any conspiracy or any thought of the Lancasters trying to take the throne again. But what he did in taking the throne would just open all that up. Buckingham says, "What says your highness to my just demand?" And then King Richard again goes, he says, "I remember Henry VI did prophesy that Richmond should be king when Richmond was a little peevish boy, a king perhaps. And so he's still not listening to Buckingham. He's thinking now back these prophecies. Wow, this Richmond was going to be king. And then Buckingham finally says, "My lord." And Richard III says, "How chance the prophet could not at that time have told me, I being by, that I should kill him." And it's just amazing. If you really look at it here, Richard III wasn't even thinking about the throne. before this time. And it just shows that once that door was opened, you know, the human nature just took over and he went for it. And notice Buckingham says, "My lord, you promised your promise for the earldom." And Richard III looks at him and says, "Richmond, when last I was at Exeter, the mayor in courtesy showed me the castle and called it Rougemont, at which name I started, because of a bard of Ireland told me once I should not live long after I saw Richmond." So he's not even listening to Buckingham. He could care less what Buckingham said. Buckingham comes back again and says, "My lord." And Richard III looks at him. You can see he's really kind of losing it here. He said, "What's o'clock?" And Buckingham says, "I am thus bold to put your grace in mind of what you promised me." He says, "Well, but what's o'clock?" And Buckingham says, "Upon the stroke of 10. And he says, "Well, let it strike." He says, "Why let it strike?" "Because that, like a jack, you keep the stroke betwixt your begging and my meditation. I'm not in the giving vein today." He's saying, "Look, you're bugging me. You know, you're interrupting my thoughts. You know, take a hike." And then Buckingham says, "Why then resolve me whether you will or no?" And Richard III says, "Tut, tut, you trouble me and am not in the vein." And then everyone exits except Buckingham. And here's what Buckingham says. He says, "It is even so. Rewards he may my true service. With such deep contempt made I him king for this. Oh, let me think on Hastings and be gone to Brecknock while my fearful head is on." And so,
yeah, he's very careful about his head, right?
So, yes. So Buckingham knows that he's done for, and so he flees to escape because, you know, Hastings was, Richard III had his head cut off because he was not supporting his plan to get the throne. Okay, so look at Richard there. He's after his wife, he's after his nephews, he's after, you know, his brother's children. You know, now he's turned on Buckingham. I mean, can you imagine, you know, being in that court and having a king like that in charge? It's just hard to believe. Okay, so Deborah, you're next.
Okay, well, I want to continue thinking about the women and their role. So, as we talked about before, we've met Lady Anne, we've met Queen Elizabeth and Queen Margaret. And this scene will meet the Duchess of York, who happens to be King Edward's mother, also Clarence, and also Richard's mother. So she is in this scene, and she is with her grandchildren, actually Clarence's children, and starts out where the children are saying, "Is our father dead?" And at first she says no. Even though she's crying, and the girl says, "There's really no name, just boy and girl is what the names are, they are." But anyway, she says, "Why do you weep so oft and beat your breasts and cry, 'Oh Clarence, my unhappy son'?" And so they know there's something wrong, but she just didn't want to tell them yet. But then they find out, and then on top of this, then Queen Elizabeth comes running in, and she's all emotional because King Edward just died. Sorry. He just died. And so she is weeping and wailing. And then it gets to be this big scene where they're all weeping and wailing, and even the children are. And you can almost think it's amusing, except it's really sad. But it starts out where Queen Elizabeth says, "Ah, who shall hinder me to wail and weep, to chide my fortune and torment myself? I'll join with black despair against my soul and to myself become an enemy." And then the Duchess says, "What means this scene of rude impatience?" And she explains that Edward is dead, the king is dead. And then, of course, the Duchess gets upset because that's her son. So she says, "Ah, so much interest have I in thy sorrow as I had title in thy noble husband. I have bewept a worthy husband's death and lived with looking on his images. But now two mirrors of his princely semblance are cracked in pieces by malignant death, And I, for comfort, have but one false glass that grieves me when I see my shame in him. Thou art a widow, yet thou art a mother, and hast the comfort of thy children left. Of course, we know she doesn't really, but anyway, won't for very long. But death has snatched my husband from mine arms and plucked two crutches from my feeble hands. Clarence and Edward, oh, what cause have I, thine being but a moiety of my moan, to overgo thy woes and drown thy cries? And then here we have the boy, and then the girl, and then Queen Elizabeth and the Duchess. They all kind of take turns wailing. And boy says, ah, aunt, you wept not for our father's death. How can we aid you with our kindred's tears? And the girl says, our fatherless distress was left unmoaned. Your widow, daughter, likewise be unwept. And the queen says, give me no help in lamentation. I am not barren to bring forth complaints. All springs reduce their currents to mine eyes, that I, being governed by the watery moon, may send forth plenteous tears to drop down the world. Excuse me. Ah, for my husband, for my dear Lord Edward. And the children say, ah, for our father, our dear Lord Clarence. The Duchess says, ah, for both mine, Edward and Clarence. And the Queen Elizabeth says, what stay had I but Edward, and he's gone? And the children say, what stay had we but Clarence, and he's gone? And they go back and forth and back and forth. And then the Duchess finally says, was never mother had so dear a loss. Alas, I am the mother of these griefs. Their woes are parceled, mine is general. She for an Edward weeps, and so do I. I for a Clarence weep, and so doth not she. These babes for Clarence weep, and so do I. I for an Edward weep, so do not they. Alas, you three on me, threefold distressed, pour all your tears. I am your sorrow's nurse, and I will pamper it with lamentation. So it's just kind of like a kind of a culmination of all the crying and tears and sorrow for the, you know, Clarence and, you know, Edward, and then talking about the other people who have died as well. Excuse me. So that is just another scene where it shows the pain of, you know, the women show with, and then with the children as well. And you were just talking about how even Richard wanted to get rid of Clarence's children. It doesn't really say that he does, though, does it?
No. There's no evidence that he does. But but I do think it's interesting. That's I guess that's like the big wailing scene.
There is another one as well.
Yeah, but we don't want to miss that one. That's I'm waiting for that one because if I could have a favorite wailing scene, it's that one. But I think again, so many people really, you know, they want to fault Shakespeare and they want to take him to task that his history wasn't accurate. But again, he is a dramatist, and even Winston Churchill believed that Shakespeare actually got it right with Richard III. I mean, we can say, well, we can, you know, get upset with the older historians, and that's what revisionist history is. They just don't like the old history, so they want to rewrite it to kind of clean it up a little bit. But I do think these wailing scenes are kind of typical of what was going on all over England with these Wars of the Roses. I mean, these were bloody. And remember, the peasants were deeply involved in these. And it's not because they were a conscripted army. It's because the lords of these great estates made them go to war. And so it's like these women are speaking for all the women in England who lost sons and husbands and nephews and all that in these really horrible wars. If you look at, you know, some of the battles, like the Battle of Towton, was like there's more English killed in that battle than any other battle on English soil. And so it really was a very difficult time. Okay, so I just have one more scene, and then we'll probably have enough time to get to the big wailing scene there at the end. So, but I just wanted to bring up this. We're going to go to Act 3, scene. Let's see, I think it's Act 3, scene 3. And maybe it's Act 4, Scene 3, so that I don't throw you. I think it's what it is. It's Act 4, Scene 3, and we're going to go to Line 1. And this is where the man who murdered the twins, the boys in the tower, the prince is in the tower, not the twins in the tower. The prince is in the tower, and he is really quite negatively affected by what happened with those boys' murder. And I just wanted to show you the comparison that even the murderer has more compassion than Richard does. And so if you just look at this, Act 4, Scene 3, and if I got a little bit confused in my notes here, but if I'm off, I'm sure you can find this scene for yourself. So Act 4, Scene 3, line 1 there, this is Tyrell. This is the murderer speaking. He says, the tyrannous and bloody deed is done. The most arch of piteous massacre that ever yet this land was guilty of. Dighton and Forrest, whom I did suborn to do this ruthless piece of butchery, although they were fleshed villains, bloody dogs, melting with tenderness and kind compassion, wept like two children in their deaths and sad stories. Lo, thus quoth Dighton, I think it should be, not Dighton, Dighton, lay those tender babes. Thus quoth Forrest, girdling one another within their innocent alabaster arms. And so what he's saying is that even Tyrell got two other murderers to do this deed, and these two men just wept like babies having to do this deed because these two brothers, they were in bed together, they were hugging each other, they were afraid. He says, within their innocent alabaster arms, their lips were four red roses on a stalk, and that is talking about, the War of the Roses, which in their summer beauty kissed each other. A book of prayers on their pillow lay, which once, quoth Forrest, almost changed my mind, but oh, the devil. There the villain stopped, whilst Dighton thus told on, we smothered the most replenished sweet work of nature, that from the prime creation o'er she framed. Those both are gone with conscience and remorse. They could not speak, and so I left them both to bring this tidings to the bloody king, and here he comes. So Richard III then walks into the scene, and Tyrell says to him, ah, hail, my sovereign liege. And notice Richard, the way he talks to him, he says, kind Tyrell, am I happy in thy news? And Tyrell says, if to have done this thing you gave in charge beget your happiness, be happy then, for it is done, my lord. He said, but did you see them dead? I did, my lord. And buried, gentle Tyrell? And notice the words he's using, gentle? How can you be gentle and kill two young boys? Tyrell says, the chaplain of the tower has buried them, but how or in what place I do not know. And then Richard says, come to me, Tyrell, soon after supper, and you shall tell the process of their death. Meantime, but think how I may do thee good and be inheritor of thy desire. Farewell till soon. And so there it just shows how Richard is really, he's almost become like this, a serial killer. He wants to hear more about how they died. And so it's really kind of sad. Now, here's his last lines here. And then, again, Richard is now looking at the audience. He's looking right into your eyes, and he says, the son of Clarence have I pent up close. His daughter meanly have I matched in marriage. The sons of Edward sleep in Abraham's bosom. And Anne, my wife, bid the world good night. Now for I know the Breton Richmond aims at young Elizabeth, my brother's daughter, and by that knot looks proudly o'er the crown. To her I go, a jolly, thriving wooer. So he's going to try and woo this daughter Elizabeth away from Richmond. And of course, Richmond has promised that he would marry this daughter of York, and he would bring the two houses together and stop the war. And so that's really for the end of the play. Now, Deborah, I'll turn it over to you. So,
okay, well, this is just a scene after they realize that the princess and the tower are gone, and Queen Margaret is there, and then Queen Elizabeth enters, and the Duchess of York, and Queen Elizabeth says, ah, my poor princess, ah, my tender babes, my unblown flowers, new appearing sweets, If yet your gentle souls fly in the air and be not fixed in doom perpetual, hover about me with your airy wings and hear your mother's lamentation. And then Queen Margaret says to us to the side, hover about her, say that right for right hath dimmed your infant morn to aged night. So if you remember, she had prophesied that something like this would happen earlier at the beginning of the play. Then Duchess of York says, so many miseries have crazed my voice that my woe-weary tongue is still and mute. Edward Plantagenet, why art thou dead? Why art thou dead? And then Queen Margaret aside says, Plantagenet doth quit Plantagenet. Edward for Edward pays a dying debt. So her Edward was killed, and another Edward is killed now. And Elizabeth says, wilt thou, O God, fly from such gentle lambs and throw them in the entrails of the wolf? When didst thou sleep when such a deed was done? And Queen Margaret says aside again, she says this little thing, she says, well, when Holy Harry died and my sweet son. So they kind of go back and forth. They're all wailing and bemoaning, you know, their losses. And then at one point, they start talking about all the different ones that have died. Margaret says, this is about line 35, I believe. If ancient sorrow be most... Did I say what act it was? I don't think I what did. It's act 4, scene 4. I'm sorry. Act 4, scene 4. I'm at line 35. Sorry. If ancient sorrow be most reverent, give mine the benefit of seniority, and let my griefs frown on the upper hand, if sorrow can admit society. Then she says, I had an Edward till Richard killed him. I had an Harry till Richard killed him. Thou hast an Edward till Richard killed him. Thou hast a Richard till Richard killed him. And then Duchess of York says, I had a Richard too, and thou didst kill him. Because you know that Margaret actually led armies at one time.
She's Queen Margaret of Anjou. We talked about that in
Queen
history.
Margaret. So then the Duchess says, I had a Rutland too, and thou hoped to kill him. Then Queen Margaret said, thou hast a Clarence too, and Richard killed him. From forth the kennel of thy womb that hath crept a hellhound that doth hunt us all to death, that dog that had his teeth before his eyes to worry lambs and lap their gentle blood, that foul defacer of God's handiwork, that excellent grand tyrant of the earth that reigns in galled eyes of weeping souls, thy womb let loose to chase us to our graves. O upright, just, and true disposing God, how do I thank thee that this carnal cur preys on the issue of his mother's body, and makes her pew fellow with others moan. So then she says, O Harry's wife, triumph not in my woes. God witness with me, I have wept for thine. So anyway, eventually, the Duchess of York, who is his Richard's mother, ends up disowning him or cursing him. Right before that, let's see, there's... I guess this is it right here. Well, the Duchess of York actually is talking to Richard as he happens to come in, and she says, "Thou toad, thou toad." She calls Richard a toad. So it's a theme here. Thou toad, where is thy brother Clarence and little Ned Plantagenet, his son? And Queen Elizabeth says, "Where is the gentle Rivers, Vaughan Grey?" Because remember, he has killed them as well. And Duchess of York says, and where is kind Hastings? So they're all coming at Richard saying, oh, you know, where are all these people that you killed? And he just kind of ignores it. He says, a flourish, trumpet, strike alarum, drums. Let not the heavens hear these telltale women. Rail on the Lord's anointed. Strike, I say. So, you know, there's someone, has drums or something with him. And he's just ignoring them and saying they're just like clamorous drums, telltale women, you know, just ignore them. But right before that time, Elizabeth even says to Margaret, teach me how to curse like you do, you know, like you did. like because Margaret cursed her at the beginning and the curses came through. And she says, I want to learn how to curse like you do. And Queen Margaret says, thy woes will make them sharp and pierce like mine. So she says that, you know, the woes, if, you know, or what do it to you, that you can do that. So that's, you know, the sad ending of how the women really end in this. They're not very, you know, everyone is basically mourning and the loss of all the men. So,
well, thank you. Well, the thing is, we don't want everyone to get like totally depressed about this play, but because at the end, if you remember, when we get to the Battle of Bosworth, even though there's another bloody battle, but Henry the Seventh or Henry Tudor does take over, and like a whole new birth for England comes forward. So I think what I'd like to do to end this, now hopefully you enjoyed all these scenes, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to replay the program on Richard III that we did back in August about the Battle of Bosworth, and then we can just end the play that way. So that's about all we have time for today. So next time, what we'll begin to do is we will begin to discuss the book 13 Hours. And so I know you'll be looking forward to that, and it's probably just the perfect time of year to do that, since we'll be right before the election in here in the United States. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/JustTheBestLiterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.